Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 2, Text Number 51. Maharaj Nimi is the nine beginnings. Naya Sangatanaham. Because his parents are highly respected members of the Varnashram social system, one becomes even more infatuated with himself. But if despite these excellent material qualifications, one does not feel even a tinge of pride within himself, he is to be considered the dearmost servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the word Janma, good birth, refers to such classes as the Murtavasikas, children of Brahmana family, Brahmana fathers and Kshatriya mothers, and Abhastas, or children of Brahmana fathers and Vaishya mothers, both of which are considered Anuloma since the father comes from a higher caste. Marriages in which the mother comes from a higher caste and the father are called Pratiloma. In any case, one who becomes proud of his so-called prestigious birth is certainly in the bodily concept of life. Birth in any material body is a serious problem which one should solve by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can thereby release himself from the golden shackles of a so-called aristocratic material body. Very nice to see the very keen wit of Srila Sridhananda Goswami. He calls them the golden shackles. High birth in the material world. One is still a prisoner or shackled in the material world. That it is, in one sense, it's the same as anyone else in the material world. They're fallen and conditioned by the material body, by the illusory energy. But if one has a very elevated birth, a very elevated position, one may consider that one is better than others because he has golden shackles. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Kanishka Adhikaris thinks that the Kama Misra Bhakti, or devotional service mixed with material endeavor, is the ultimate in spiritual life. They become attached to verses such as this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is worshipped on the proper execution of prescribed duties in the system of Vana and Ashram. There is no other way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must be situated in the institution of the four Vanas and Ashrams. That is from the Vishnu Purana. Thus they think that material work in which a portion of the fruits are offered to God forms the highest platform of human life. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, there are several smriti literatures that have encouraged such mixed devotional service. Such books are taken by materialistic devotees as facilities for offending the holy name of the Lord because of egotistic attachment to the material body. Thus one thinks that a prestigious position in the Bhagavatam system, according to birth and so-called pious activities, is a prerequisite for becoming successful in life. It's interesting because in India at the moment, over the last couple of days, there have been big riots between the Hindus and the Christians. And Arisen province, Maharashtra, Arisen police. And the Hindus, who pretend to follow the Ramasram these days, but don't. They follow a caste system based on birth, really, which is completely different from the actual Varnashram, which is based upon one's work and qualifications. But anyway, they feel that due to birth there is a certain prestige, and due to their pious activities in a particular caste there is a certain prestige, and they identify that as being very elevated, and that is their prime service to God. Now, the Christians, who are many of them previously Hindus and Indian people who live in the same villages, they're in one sense considered to be lesser by the Hindus. But you see how this prestige and pride comes in. So they're considering that they're Christians as something less, and therefore they have started killing them, burning down their houses, forcing them that, you know, if they do not convert back to their so-called Hinduism, that they will kill them. So tens of thousands, you know, have been driven out of their homes, and their homes have been, you know, burned to the ground. And if some of the I saw there was one lady, a young lady, probably maybe early 20s, who was a Hindu, but her uncle was a Christian, devout Christian, and because of that, to try and convert, you know, the family, the men that took her into the forest and, you know, gang raped her. So this is their, you know, very elevated, you know, proud position as Hindus. We are so much better than you. But they do not see. It's a false pride because, you know, they're acting like animals, really. And trying to preserve a system which they've already perverted, and trying to preserve that system by sinful activity, by killing, raping, burning, and pillaging. This is how they are preserving Hindu culture. But in their pride, of course, they are thinking that this is excellent service to God. So they cannot see, of course, that people may follow many different religious practices, and they may be Christian, they may be Hindu, they may be Muslim, they may be Buddhist, Vaishnavas, Sikhs. There's so many different bona fide religions of the world where the followers are actually making progress if they're following that religion properly. If they're following properly, then they are actually making some progress. And one should not criticise or discriminate or disturb those who are actually making progress, even though they may not be as progressed as others. Whatever progression that someone is actually making should actually be assisted. Therefore, you see, Srila Prabhupada, in his preaching all over the world, he never condemned any religious process and never criticised them, but he was very, very strong on the point that whatever religion you claim to be, we don't say to give it up, but we say just actually follow it. You know, don't be a hypocrite. Don't be a hypocrite Christian, you know, Jew, Muslim, whatever. That should be criticised. Even then, that should be done in such a way that it doesn't cause disturbance, but it should be pointed out in such a way that actually people can make real progress. But certainly, this just, you know, and of course, you know, it has been taken many on an individual platform, how, you know, particular people are making some within one religion, some people are making progress and some people are cheating, being hypocritical. On an individual basis, it should be seen what is happening, not that the whole mass of, you know, anyone who's a Christian should, you know, annihilated, anyone who's a Buddhist. So, sometimes, because actually what we see here is the point of this verse is that when there is false pride, one actually cannot serve God, because false pride is the symptom that one is serving another designation other than the designation that I am the eternal servant of God. That's the real position of the living entity. I am the eternal servant of God. Everything else is a false designation. I am the servant of my body, which is born in a particular, you know, vana or ashram, or, you know, a particular caste, or what have you, or a particular country. I am the servant of my family, I am the servant of my nation, I am the servant of humanity. As long as we have these particular identifications, we actually cannot maintain a real identity. These are all false pride. They're false identifications, and they're based upon pride, that one is feels that one is I am independent, although I am a servant of God, I am the servant foremost, I am the servant of this particular designation. And that is my real shelter. That's, yes, I am the servant of God, but foremost I am the servant of this body. And by protecting this body, that is my real shelter. Not so much God. See, so there's a difference. Whereas one who removes those designations, that no, I am not the servant of this body, it cannot give me shelter. I am the servant of God. He can give me shelter. That is. So this pride, accepting false designations and being proudly attached to that, it diminishes our ability to perform render pure service to God. And we see many, many examples of it all over the world. So that was one that came to mind. So the purport goes on. But those who have actually taken shelter of the holy name of Krishna never boast about their birth in the material world, nor do they pride themselves on their so-called expertise in material work. As long as one's mentality is encumbered by the material designations of the Varnashram system, one has very little chance of becoming free from material bondage and establishing himself as dear to the Lord. In this regard, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphatically declared that he could not identify himself with any Varnashram designation, such as that of a great intellectual or priest, a courageous warrior in the Lord's army, a brilliant businessman making money for the Lord, or the hardest worker for the Lord. Nor would Chaitanya Mahaprabhu identify himself as a stalwart brahmachari, a noble householder, or an exalted sannyasi. These designations reflect the material pride that can infiltrate the execution of devotional service. Although a devotee may carry out the standard duties of Varnashram, his only designation is Gopi Bhattu Padukamalai Rola Dasa Dasa Vadas. The eternal servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, the master of the Gopis, Krishna. According to Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's core, when a devotee understands that the process of bhakti yoga is complete in itself, and he becomes absorbed in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, the supremely merciful personality of Godhead affectionately lifts such a first-class devotee up onto his own lap. The Supreme Lord can be pleased only by unalloyed devotion and not by any arrangement of the gross body composed of five material elements or the subtle body composed of innumerable speculations and bogus pride. In other words, Lord Krishna can never be pleased by one's so-called aristocratic body, which is due to be devoured by worms or vultures. If one becomes proud of his material birth and so-called pious activities by such false pride, one gradually develops the impersonal mentality of merely renouncing the fruit of work, or else the karmic mentality of enjoying the fruits of work. Neither the karmis nor the jnanis, speculators, are aware that the fruit of work actually belongs to Krishna. The conclusion is that one should carefully give up all false pride and always remember that he is a humble servant of Krishna, as stated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Amanina Manasina Kedatanya Sadhapati. So, actually, these verses from verse 45, and then picking up again at verse 48, there are nine verses which describe the Uttama Adhikari, the first class devotee. And so in text number 45, which is a verse very often quoted, you can remember the essence of that, that description of what a pure devotee is. Text number 45. Often quoted, when we quote the three different types of devotees, their realizations, this verse is the one we quote, verse 45. And what was that? What is the vision of the Uttama Adhikari? What does he see wherever he looks? I'll give you a clue. Krishna! Krishna. He sees everything within Krishna, and Krishna within everything. That's right. You make my job very easy. So, then text number 48, it is described that whatever he sees within the material world, he sees as the illusory energy of the Lord. Thus, in the next verse, 49, it describes that although that's his vision, he's never in the bodily concept of life, and he's above happiness and distress. So although he sees everything, or he or she sees everything in the material world as the illusory energy of the Lord, they're still always acting on the, you know, with their body, with their mind, and yet using everything in the service of Krishna, understanding the purpose of creation, but at the same time, although they're using the body and mind, they're above the bodily platform of life. They don't hold that designation that I am the body or the mind or what have you. And then text number 50 describes that therefore one who is above the bodily concept of life and yet always engaged in the material world, liberating the conditioned souls from material illusion, they have no material desires themselves because they don't consider themselves to be the material body. As described there, the material desires cannot even enter within the mind, you know, the first class capabilities. So in this verse, so you see the logical theme of these verses, and in this verse here is describing that, you know, the pure devotee of the Lord, the Uttama Adhikari, is actually beyond all, even though that he may be in a very elevated position within the material world, he never forgets his position as a servant of the Lord, and never forgets the service that he has to do for the Lord. That is what is being stated. he always remembers that my first is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no one superior to him. He is the supreme shelter. He is the supreme controller. And the first duty is to serve Krishna. He never forgets that. And that I, you know, we are all the eternal servant of Krishna. Even if one, if that devotee happens to, you know, be in a very elevated position by some material standard, still they never forget that. Whereas others do not have that realization, and they are completely enamored by their material situation, and therefore cannot remember the real purpose of life is to serve the Supreme Lord and not so many other designations. So that's the theme that we've followed so far. so it's very interesting because Srila Prabhupada's life is actually a very vivid example of Krishna making this statement. Depend upon me, and on no other circumstance. Don't depend on any material designations or material arrangements. Just depend on me. There's that, and Krishna actually makes arrangements for his devotee to bring them to that consciousness. How does Krishna do that? What is the arrangement that Krishna makes to bring a devotee to that consciousness where they have, they're fully dependent upon Krishna and no other material arrangement? He takes everything away from Krishna. Very simple. Job done. Actually, so there's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter 88, text number 8, where Krishna says exactly that, that when he especially favours someone, it's a special favour. As we read in the Bhagavad Gita that in 641, that when someone performs devotional service, but they don't complete the task, in their next life, they're allowed to take birth in an aristocratic family, you know, all the family, you know, wealthy family like that. But if Krishna is especially favourable, he would take that all. There's a purport in the seventh canto also, which Srila Prabhupada explains that sometimes devotees are born not in aristocratic families or very wealthy families, but in very impoverished or very disturbing circumstances, and that is a special favour to that devotee, more so than letting them take birth in aristocratic or high birth, because as we know, it is very easy. How many people, and even devotees, you see quite often people come to devotional service when they're a little distressed, and then when things, you know, start to flow a little bit, you know, the money comes in, and they get married, they get a couple of things, you're going, well, Hare Krishna, you know, see you later. I'm okay now, yeah, thanks for having us. That's very rewarding, very rewarding. But if Krishna is very kind, he will take everything away. And Srila Prabhupada, he read that verse. He said, when I read that verse, I shuddered. And he thought, I think Krishna will take everything away from me. And then he laughed because he did. And a few times you'll see Srila Prabhupada relate, this is the theme of his life. Because when he met his spiritual master, his spiritual master said to him, you know, you're an educated person, you become Krishna conscious and you preach Krishna consciousness throughout the West. So Srila Prabhupada said that from the moment he heard that, he was always making plans to do it. But he said he had a difference of opinion with Krishna. Because Srila Prabhupada thought, he saw all the sannyasi godbrothers, that basically they're going, they're begging from door to door like that. And he thought, you know, why take up that, you know, path, begging door to door, you know, very difficult, how they get, you know, without money, how can they perish? So I will become rich, and then I will spread Krishna consciousness and fulfill that order of my spiritual master. So that was it. But Krishna had a different opinion. Krishna was thinking, you don't need wealth, you just need me. It's like the story with because the battle of Kurukshetra, where Duryodhana took Krishna's army and Arjuna just took Krishna. And Duryodhana was thinking, you fool. So Prabhupada described, so he was working as chemical industry, pharmaceutical, and he described that he worked, he did things so well as a businessman that everyone wanted him, and there was this very, very big company, and they offered him a position. And he was saying that had he taken that position, he would have been earning, you know, thousands and thousands of rupees each month for very little work. But they made one condition, and he didn't like that condition, and so he wanted them to change that condition. And because of that, he didn't get the job. But he stayed with the company he was with Bose. But the problem was that there was an envious person who wanted Srila Prabhupada's position, and he made some politics, and Prabhupada, he's not acting for the welfare of this company, he's acting for the welfare of himself. And therefore he lost that, so then he lost that position, he lost the other office, and he ended up trying to start his own pharmaceutical company. And he was saying that astrologers told him that he would have so much opportunity to be, you know, extremely wealthy, million, like a billionaire. He said the opportunities were there, but Krishna took away his intelligence. He wasn't supplying him the intelligence how to actually achieve that success to become wealthy. And Krishna was actually withdrawing his ability. So gradually that brought him to the position. Of course, this is a transcendental leela between Krishna and his pure devotee, in the same way that we see that Arjuna, who's a personal associate, personal friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's a transcendental lila between Krishna and Arjuna, that Arjuna appeared to be placed in a difficult circumstance whereby he, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So in the same way, we see that in Srila Prabhupada's life that Krishna was directing to give up instruction. Not so much for Srila Prabhupada, of course, was enjoying that transcendental reciprocation with Krishna, and he could perceive Krishna's plan. Ordinarily, most people would just keep going. Materially, everything is, of course, his plan was to preach. He's just thinking, I'll become wealthy to preach, because to fulfill the desire of spiritual master, he wasn't trying to become wealthy for himself. But Krishna was saying, you don't need that. And he was describing that his spiritual master was saying, in dreams, he was coming to him and saying, just come with me, take some of this, come with me, go and preach in the Western world like that. You don't need anything else. So Srila Prabhupada was sort of resisting, but Krishna smashed everything, took everything. And of course, as Krishna describes in that sloka, when a person loses their wealth and their position, then their family and their friends think, Krishna thinks he's not a bad person, but a bit of a loser, really. People start to, when you lose your position, your wealth, you'll be surprised how, your friends don't want to know you anymore. They don't visit, they don't call, the knowledges that they criticize, and gradually become very distressed, and you have no other recourse, no other shelter except Krishna. So Krishna did that. And yet, Prabhupada describes it, then Krishna fed him unlimited intelligence, though, how to spread Krishna consciousness in the West. So you see Srila Prabhupada's expertise. So when he was trying to become wealthy, Krishna removed his intelligence. He made some wrong decisions, which destroyed everything. But when it came to preaching Krishna consciousness, although he, for instance, he wasn't allowed to take money to the West, so Krishna, take books. Krishna inspired him, take books. So those books, he was able to preach. By preaching, he was able to get followers. We see that in the very early days, he went to Japan. He had $5,000 that his disciples had, gathered, and but he managed to do this wonderful deal with the, the printing company, where he ended up with $50,000 of credit for books, which basically built the whole movement, because then he could sell those books, and then he got like members, and so in this way, in so many different ways, Srila Prabhupada's intelligence was just so refined. He did so many wonderful things whereby Krishna consciousness was spread all over the world, because Krishna was giving him, how to do something miraculous. There's no facility, there's no wealth, there's no this, there's no nothing. And yet, by being in the right places at the right time, making the right decisions, all by Krishna's direction, that this Krishna consciousness movement was successful. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada explained that, actually, he was very frustrated, trying to, get his business together and manage, the family and this and that, and so many different things. And even he was trying to preach, so he started his, league of devotees in Jhansi. And again, he reflects back on that, he was thinking, I will, preach here, but Krishna had a different idea. What are you doing in this little town here? I want you to preach all over the world. Okay. So Prabhupada reflects that he, in one sense, there was trying to execute the duty of the spiritual master. But there is sometimes we tend to stick to some limited conception, that I cannot step out of the enjoyment of my friends and family. I cannot step out of the, you know, security of this neighbourhood or, you know, what have you. So we see with Srila Prabhupada that Krishna forced him. You step out of that family, but he then, you know, he ended up with an unlimited family. Although he was trying to make some arrangements for wealth to spread Krishna consciousness in a limited way through pharmaceuticals, Krishna gave him, unlimited wealth. Although he was trying to preach in, you know, start a center in a particular place, Krishna allowed him to unlimitedly establish centers all over the world. So sometimes we have a particular limited idea, but Krishna will sometimes smash those ideas. But what we have to see is that he is doing that in order to give us something unlimited. Because the problem is that although Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, surrender unto me and I will, you know, maintain what you have, preserve what you have, carry what you lack, get you over all the obstacles of life. But that faith is not there. But Krishna, you know, gradually makes arrangements whereby we have no choice to make that leap of faith, just a complete faith in Krishna. Okay. So that is, we see in the life of Srila Prabhupada that he was uttama adhikari, one who completely depended upon Krishna, and by Krishna's transcendental arrangements, Srila Prabhupada manifested that consciousness whereby he was not the servant of any other designation. I'm not the servant of Gandhi's movement, I'm not the servant of this family, I'm not the servant of this, particular, small community or, what have you. He is the servant of Krishna, and he was completely fixed, and whatever facility exists in the material world is all meant to be used in Krishna's service. So, therefore, Prabhupada is a perfect example of this philosophy. Of course, we have many examples, but Srila Prabhupada is the most vivid and exalted, even amongst uttama adhikaris. It is always good to meditate upon his particular leaders. Because Srila Prabhupada is qualified, therefore he's qualified to lead the whole world. This was discussed in a previous report. The whole world is experiencing extreme problems and no one is happy. Everyone is fearful and suffering because they cannot perceive the presence of the Supreme Lord at all. What to speak of in all things, at all times, in all places. And therefore, the whole world has lost its connection with Krishna, and therefore they're like animals in the sense, they're not guided, they're not properly guided. Just like, if you bring so many animals into a room or what have you, there needs to be someone who, guides, manages, so that, they're all properly fed and looked after and maintained and, what have you, but, they're not really capable of themselves and himself. Our whole world is in that situation, so many different problems. The solution is that not that everyone in the world has to become God conscious. That, of course, that opportunity is there. But if the leaders, and not even if all the leaders are God conscious, but if the leaders follow that God conscious person, the whole world, even just a few devotees, pure devotees of the caliber of Srila Prabhupada, if the leaders would follow, just even a handful of pure devotees, all problems in the world would be solved. So, because people have no, they do not know the purpose of life at the moment, right throughout the world. And Srila Prabhupada, he used to approach everyone. He would approach the scientists, and people would come from the United Nations, and they would come from, you know, the subcommittees, and, you know, the government departments, and you know, this organization and that organization. And he would ask them all the same question, which no one could ever answer. Simple question. What is the purpose of life? And they could never give an answer. And so he would say to them, how can you fix anything? How can you solve problems? I ask you a simple question, and you cannot give me a satisfactory answer. Srila Prabhupada pointed out, one of the great legacies of Srila Prabhupada was he pointed out that this society has no brain. Society is like a body. The actual Varnashrama system is that you have the brain, like the Brahmanas, you have the Kshatriyas who are like the arms, you have the waist which is like the Vaishyas, you have the legs which is like the Sudras. In this way, the body functions. The body is served and all parts of society serve. When society is served, the Sudras are looked after, the Vaishyas, everyone equally according to the benefit that they need. And they're all serving the body, and the body is serving them. That is the Varnashrama system. That's when it is properly functioning. But it must have a brain. Without the brain, you know, the legs are going, the arms and what have you, everything is deranged. It doesn't function properly. The one thing where society is failing is because they do not have a brain. There is no department. So the Prabhupada would say, where is your department? The brain department. And they would admit, we don't have one. We don't really have one. So therefore, because there's no brain, people don't know what to do and what not to do. They can't distinguish between what is sinful or impious and what is pious. If you go and ask anyone, you even ask people, as I gave the example before, Hindus, you know, raping and killing Christians, is that pious? Or Christians doing the same to others, is that pious? Maintaining slaughterhouses for, you know, cows especially, is that pious? They say, you know, if you ask many Christians, of course, that, you know, why do you maintain slaughterhouses to, you know, for these animals? And they say that God created the world for us to enjoy it. And Srila Prabhupada's position was, yes, that is right, but not to enjoy sinfully. But the problem is they can't distinguish between what is sinful and what is not sinful. Yes, there are two purposes to the world. It is there for enjoyment, according to your allotment, and it is also there for liberation when you realize that enjoyment is actually suffering. So material life is not meant for enjoying sinfully, and that they cannot distinguish. So there is no brain to distinguish what is the goal of life and how it is executed. People do not know. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada described, you can have so many United Nations, you can have United Nations, this organization, that organization, so many different organizations, and none of them will, they'll all be a waste of time. And he would say that to them. If, you know, people would come from, you know, these prestigious, you know, they would talk in their, you know, drawly voices, that they're very, you know, highly educated and, you know, highly situated within in the world, and you could tell by their voice, you could see the pride oozing out. They should have part of point out. It is simply a waste of time because there's no brain. And they could not answer just some simple questions to distinguish between piety and impiety. What is the goal of life? that they did not know. How then can you actually make people happy? Just like now in Australia, the government, you know, there's a world crisis with economics. So what did the government do? They give $10 billion and they just distribute it to the people. Now what's that going to fix? Because we know that's $10 billion. You know, there'll be so many billions spent on, you know, eating animals, so many billions spent on intoxication. It's the spring, you know, racing carnival. How much is going to go down in the track, the TAV? You know, how much of that $10 billion is really going to filter out to some, you know, tangible benefit? But if you say to them, look, give $9 billion to all the people and give $1 billion to the Hare Krishna movement and we'll solve all the problems of the world, not just Australia. Well, no, we don't have $5 for the Hare Krishna. But what is it going to solve by giving money, $10 billion, into the hands of people who are addicted to sense gratification and sinful life, and they're thinking that somehow that's going to solve any sort of problem at all? Right? It's just going to completely exacerbate the problem. So this is the thing. So, you know, these verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is not that we are, you know, a closed society, you know, becoming pure devotees and we are just quietly going back to Godhead. These verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam give the key by which the whole world can actually be benefited and become happy by learning to recognize how the pure devotee is always seeing the guidance and the direction given by the Supreme Lord Himself. And that direction will save humanity, and that direction will not only make us happy in this world, but that direction will also take us back to the spiritual world. So, Srila Prabhupada points out also that we shouldn't, although it is, you know, it is funny, sometimes very disturbing what people in this world do, where they're almost like animals. But he said, although they're like animals, we should not hate them. You know, we should see everyone as a spirit soul. And we should preach Krishna consciousness. We should learn, you know, the art of following the direction of the pure devotees of the Lord, who can always see the will of Krishna, and we should preach that will of the Lord throughout the world. If we don't do that, of course, then what happens? Of course, we also become enamored by the same material energy that is causing everyone else in the material world to become sort of like animals. So this is anyway some of the points of discussion. How the Uttama Adhikari, the most glorious personalities within the universe, very rare, but even a few pure devotees of the Lord actually can save the whole world from becoming taking birth. People are thinking that they're making progress by, you know, as Prabhupada says, they're piling up stones and bricks. You know, so all over the world we see, and people are really impressed. Oh, we are so civilized. Look how high we've stacked these stones and bricks like this. And over here we stack them like that. We are so, you know, people think, yeah, we are so civilized. But what is the benefit when the people who are acting like animals will take birth as rats in that pile of bricks and stones? What is the advantage? What is the progress? And the next one. So there's a false progress like that. So these verses are glorifying the pure devotees of the Lord. We should understand who is a pure devotee, and we should understand the benefit that we can derive from following in their footsteps. And if we preach Krishna consciousness, that is the best way to actually gradually attain pure devotional service. Preach Krishna consciousness, chant the holy name of the Lord, that's the best way to attain that level of the Uttama Adhikara, because it forces you, when you're preaching, it forces you to always see the presence, the direction of the Lord. Very, very powerful, very intense. When we're not preaching, then, you know, that intensity of, you know, always depending on the Lord, always trying to see the Lord, always trying to see the guidance of the Lord, it is not so intense in their life. But when you go out and preach, that it becomes very intense. And that intensity, that fire, purifies one very, very strongly and helps one to advance towards this pure devotion state. I'll just leave it there for my head on questions or comments.
On that comment about Christians and the Hindus conflict, Prabhupada, I think in the Sri Charitamrita, actually mentions that the Lord Chaitanya's relationship with a Muslim, how they came together in the ecstatic love that they had. So
he considered the Muslim to be like his uncle. They had a very affectionate, almost like family type relationship. Yes, there was no us and them. Yeah, that's a good point. Any other comments or questions?
When you're talking about Prabhupada's life with Krishna arranging everything so that he could spread Krishna consciousness, is it the same or similar just in everyone's life that Krishna is arranging everything minutely like that? Or, I mean, I guess it has to do with that.
Yeah, he is doing that for his devotees. Definitely, he's taking a direct charge in the life of all the devotees. And, you know, sometimes if we're chanting and praying to Krishna to make progress spiritually and to, you know, develop that relationship, that love for Krishna, but sometimes we're very sincere in that prayer, but we're hampered by previous bad habits, previous conditioning, and some misconceptions, then Krishna helps us, all the devotees, by smashing, you know, those obstacles for us. Sometimes, as described in the pastimes of Lord Nityananda, sometimes if someone is very insincere, and sometimes even offensive, the Lord will actually grant them the fulfillment of their particular material desires. And that actually keeps them away from the society of devotees. So, but definitely Krishna is arranging the life of the devotee generally according to how much the devotee wants to approach Krishna. And whatever obstacles are there, if the devotee is sincere, Krishna will remove all those obstacles. Any other questions? For the pure devotees, it's not a stumbling block. what is what seems like a great mountain to cross for someone who's insincere or, you know, beginning is like something very easy to tread over for a pure devotee. So that therefore, you know, this verse is describing that how exalted are the pure devotees. That Queen Kunti is describing is these things are stumbling blocks. And we see throughout the entire world, everyone, including those, the majority of those who are even trying to follow some religious principles, are actually held back from pure devotional service by this stumbling block of, you know, high birth and proud and some material qualification or, you know, position. The whole world is being held back, but the pure devotees are so exalted that they are very easy to step over that obstacle. So, it helps to illuminate the exalted position of a pure devotee.
Why does Krishna facilitate? Like he says from Bhagavad Gita, the thing was in rich or any Krishna personalities. So then why he facilitates that? Why does he facilitate that? I mean, of course.
Why does he facilitate what?
For devotees who are not pure, why does he facilitate that to take birth?
Well, what happens is Krishna allows devotees to take birth in certain situations by which they don't have to work, they have to work, but they don't have to work that hard. They don't have to struggle. If you look at the majority of people on this planet, in war-torn areas, poverty-stricken areas, the majority are struggling for their daily existence on this planet. For most of us here, we might think, oh, I've got a few bills this week, my life's a bit tough, but we're living in the lap of the gods. Even if we have a little flat and we have a little dinky old car, but we're really living in the lap of the gods if you can compare our situation with what's going on in the world. So that high birth is facility so that we, because we don't have to struggle, look at us all sitting here in Srimad Bhagavatam class. Otherwise, we'd be taking a 5-mile trek, you know, dodging snipers, to come back to 5 litres of water. Now, we're not doing that. We're not kicking around in a huge pile of rubbish trying to find a few scraps of mouldy bread. There are a lot of people. We're not out, you know, searching for bits of plastic and tin to build ourselves a little shelter. We're sitting here, we have so much time to chant around, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, enjoy the association of devotees. Some of the devotees, you see them all in the temple doing so much service. That is a facility that we've been given. That's why Krishna gives it to us, so we can do exactly what we're doing now and engage in devotional service. If someone becomes bewildered by that good situation, that is most regrettable. That, you know, and, but it is, we see it a lot, that people take the devotional service and they don't realise they've got such a wonderful life. It's not meant, Krishna's given them that opportunity. You don't have to struggle or fight, you know, like the rest of the world. Finish the business. That's why I'm giving you that situation. That's why Krishna gives it. It's a great kindness. It's not meant for the bewilderers. If we again become bewildered, it's really a bad use of our independence. It's a bad choice. It's actually Krishna's kindness. It's not like Krishna is giving us a situation with, you know, comfortable life and you know, what have you, so that we'll be bewildered. He's not trying to hurt us, he's trying to help us. But therefore, but when we follow and listen to the pure devotees and the Bhagavatam, we can understand that, we can see Krishna's will. If we stop listening to the pure devotees, we do become bored. So it's very important that we always try to hear from exalted devotees, because they can always point out what Krishna has done for us, why each and every one of us is in the position we're in, and how that's, you know, for our benefit to, you know, be happy materially and spiritually. That's the difference. It's always following the spiritual master, the Uttamata Kauris, the Srimad Bhagavatam, following Bhagavad Gita. You know, Krishna is speaking personally. If we hear Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, hear the devotees, then we'll never become bewildered. And as soon as we stop hearing, then that same facility that Krishna has given for our spiritual benefit, we'll become bewildered by it, and we just end up becoming a karmic. And if we, you know, at the time of death, if we, you know, die, you know, engage in the activities of the karmic, in the next life, we can take birth, absorbed in those karmic activities again. But there will be some opportunity to take up spiritual service.
Any other questions?